Tonight we'd like to do three Mishnayos of the third parak, Mishnah Yud Yilaf in the base. Mishnah Yud Rabdostai Bar Yanai Mishum Ameir Omer, Kol Shechech Davar Mi Mishnah. So if a person forgets something that he learned, Ma'ala Alava Kasuv Kilim Mishchai Ben Afshal. So the Torah looks at it as if he is liable with his life. Shenem, as it says, Raki Shama Lecha Ushmar Nafshecha Ma'od. You should guard your nefesh very much. Pentishkach, lest you forget, as the Dvar Mashav Anecha, those things that you saw with your eyes. Yachal afilo tokfel of Mishnah. So does that mean even if he forgot and it wasn't anything he did wrong that he forgot, maybe of old age or an accident, whatever it is. So that it says, ha'inim eschai b'nafsho, ad she'esha v'yisi v'yem b'libo. That won't be liable. It's only liable when you do things to forget. The next Mishnah says, "V'chinim b'dos omer kol shiur eschato chodemes echachmasach chachmasam eskayemes." If a person has more years chet than wisdom, his wisdom is preserved. Kol shechachmasach chodemes yiras chato. But if he has more wisdom than years chet, ein chachmasam eskayemes, his wisdom will not be preserved. And finally, the third Mishnah, "Huya omer kol shemaasav merubin mechachmasach." If your deeds exceed your knowledge, chachmasam eskayemes, your knowledge is preserved. Kol shechachmasach merubin mechachmasach. If your knowledge is more than your deeds, en chachmasam eskayemes, then your knowledge will not be preserved. The common thread of each of these Mishnayos, and it's almost unspoken, that chachma is of great significance. We put a high value on chachma, and we don't want to lose our chachma. We want our chachma to be preserved. And it begins with an actual lois hasei, if you will, an iser hishama lecha shmonash ma'od pentishkach hasdama shavanecha. Now the pasuk itself is discussing Matan Torah. The pasuk specifically is addressing the things that you saw with your eyes. It's discussing ma'amid hasina, and some people will include this in the zechiros every day. They will say the pasuk of ma'amid hasina. We should always remember the events of hasina. But the Gemara, the Mishnah, and later the Gemara learns that this also applies not just to the events of Har Sinai, but specifically to Torah that we learned at Har Sinai. And if a person forgets what he learns, it's considered as if he is guilty with his nefesh. And the Rabbeinu Yonah in his commentary tells us that forgetfulness is very common, and therefore it's required upon of us to constantly review, to make sure that we don't forget, and we shouldn't rely on our memory if it's our memory could be flawed. So a person has to constantly review to make sure that he doesn't forget what he has learned. And then the next two Mishnayos discuss Yiras Chet and Ma'asim as tools to preserve Chachma, and to make sure a person doesn't lose that which he has learned and that which he knows. The idea that a person is required by the Torah to make sure he doesn't forget anything, if he forgets, he's mischayev b'nafsho, ki'ilu is mischayev b'nafsho. So right away there's a question asked in the Balatanya wrote a Shulchan Aruch, and in the Shulchan Aruch has a section called Hilchas Talmud Torah. So he asked the question, why should I learn ever anything? Because if the din is, if I learn something I forget it, I'm kilu mischayev b'nafsho, I'm better off by not learning and not knowing and not forgetting. You can't hold me accountable for forgetting something I never learned in the first place. So if it's so such a big deal to forget what I've learned, you're better off not learning in the first place. So to this, the Shulchan Aruch answers that if you forget something that you already learned, it's ke'ilu mischayev b'nafsho. It's as if you are liable with your life. If you don't learn when you can, you are liable with your life, not ke'ilu. It's not a ke'ilu mischayev b'nafsho. It is a mischayev b'nafsho. So it's not good advice to just, okay, I won't learn, and then I won't have to forget what I learned. You have to learn. And now that you have to learn, you have to make sure you don't forget what you learn. And this requires a great deal of review. And he goes on to describe how many times people should review to constantly keep their memory sharp for that which they have learned. There is a comment in the Keser Rosh from Chaim Volozhin who says that this Mishnah applied to the time when everything was learned by heart. When everything is learned by peh, if you forget something, it's a tragedy because it's irreplaceable. And that's where the Mishnah is saying, if you forget something, you learn kilu mischayav nafshal. But today, that everything is recorded and written down, there's no kilu mischayav nafshal anymore. If you forget, let's look it back up. You have this farm, just check it out, and it's there. So you don't say it's kilu mischayav nafshal, which perhaps would explain why the Shulchan Aruch doesn't bring this halacha in Hilchos Talmud Torah. It does not bring this halacha if yeshuchech dav mishnaso ma'alav chazik kilu mischayav nafshal. So that works out well with that approach of Chaim Volozhin. However, it's not universally embraced. Shulchan Aruch Rav takes it literally even to this day. He says mitzvahs don't change from time to time. If this was a mitzvah then, it's a mitzvah now. We find a similar concept in a different Gemara. The Gemara Makkah says that it's a terrible thing for a person to study Torah alone. A person should study Torah with a chavrusa. And if you study alone, it's a terrible thing, and it's silly, and he'll forget his learning, and it's not something that you should do. So there are those who say that that only applied to the time when people learned by heart. When everything was learned by heart, you had to have a study partner. Because if you are reviewing by heart and you make a mistake, who's going to correct your mistake? You're going to end up learning it wrong, and you'll never correct yourself. So it is a terrible thing to learn by yourself when you're learning by heart. But since we have Svarim today, Mishnayos are written, Gemara is written, everything is written down for us, so you can learn by yourself. And many, many people do learn by themselves because they can learn by whatever the reason is. You're never learning by yourself. You're learning with the Sefer, and the Sefer has all the material without a concern that you'll get it wrong. Now, it's possible you learn something wrong. That happens. But in the idea of what the Gemara and Makkos was saying, that it's terrible to learn by yourself, that could easily be argued was only talking about the time when people learned Baal Peh. So we find this concept that when Torah was learned Baal Peh, there was a greater concern of forgetting or learning wrong or making a mistake in your review. But today that everything's written down, there's less concern about forgetting something. You can look it up, it's there, it's available, and perhaps it wouldn't have the same severity. Fine. But there are definitely opinions that say it applies today. Which brings us to another question that is discussed in the poskim, and that is as follows. The Gemara in Harias tells us there are numerous things that are kasha l'shikcha. There are things that cause people to forget. Eating olives makes us forgetful. This is one example. The Gemara goes on to say having olive oil is good for your memory. But olives is bad for your memory. So, is it forbidden to eat olives if the Mishnah says, Klo shechech dov Mishnah so, my love akoski v'schai ben afsho, does that mean that I have to stay away from things that are kosher l'shikcha? Because if the Torah is telling me not to forget my learning, then eating things that cause me to forget could be terrible. I'm going to be over the Isser. So maybe I shouldn't eat it. And it's brought down in the name of Chazanish that he held this way. That's brought in the name of Chazanish that those things that the Gemara says are difficult for memory, one may not eat because of this Mishnah of Koshech Dov Mishnah So, Kim Mishchai V'Nafsho. It is brought that the stipler would not eat olives ever because of this issue that the Chazanish held that it's Kosh L'Shikha. Now, there are some who want to say, well, eat olives and drink olive oil. A lady called me up a couple weeks ago that she heard, her husband heard, someone heard, that if you pour olive oil into your olives, then it's okay. In other words, you have the antidote mixed in with the poison. So I actually found some from that said to do that. They asked if Chaim Kanievsky about it, and he said that you shouldn't do it because in the time of the Gemara, it says olive oil was beneficial and olives were detrimental. Today, our constitution is much weaker than it was then. It could well be that olives are more harmful for us now than they were then, and it could be olive oil helps less now than it helped then. And therefore, you don't get out of it by having olive oil with your olives. It's not going to help you any. This is what Rav Chaim Kanievsky brings. Now, for those of you who enjoy olives, I will add that the Kaf HaChaim says that this only applies to raw olives. It does not apply to olives in brine. To my knowledge, none of us eat olives raw. They're practically inedible. They're very bitter. So he wants to say, once they're in a brine, the whole thing doesn't apply. It's a different food than the Gemara is talking about. And I suspect that's what most people do with, but the Starbuck won't eat olives either way. He would not eat olives. They felt we're not taking chances. In other words, you know, I'll find a safe that says if it's in a brine, it's not going to harm your memory. They don't want to take a chance. Again, if your memory is at a premium, chachma is at a premium, we don't want to forget anything. So they're not going to take it even in a brine. But there are those who say that that's a very big distinction between what the Gemara is talking about and what is referred to over here. What we have today, I'm sorry. That the Gemara's olives are raw olives and our olives are not. Yeah?
So do people used to eat raw olives that this was something that had to be warned against?
They salted and ate it, yeah, something like that. That's what it sounds like. There's a whole list of things. One of the things is you can't eat an animal's heart. So generally speaking, you don't buy hearts of animals in the store, but it might be in your salami. It might be in sausage, might be in hot dogs. You never know what you're getting in there. So some people won't eat it because they're afraid there may be a lave behemoth in there. I don't know. There are things like that. So there's a list of things that the Gemara doesn't recommend because of kosher shikha. Yeah.
What about like the end of a challah?
So the end of a challah, there are those who say that it has to do with forgetting, even though it's not mentioned in the Gemara. The Gemara does not mention the challah ends. There is a tshuva from Dayan Weiss where he was asked specifically about what's this thing about the end of the challah. He says, I never saw a source for it, but everyone does it, so he doesn't do it. In other words, and this is from a big place. He says, you don't know, it seems to be such a minig. But what do they do with those ends of challah? They throw it away or they give it to the women at the table,
what?
Right? So evidently they're not nervous if women eat olives or women eat ends of challah and stuff like that.
They don't know if they cut off like a few corks, like you just... Or is it like you have to cut
There's
off
no,
the whole piece?
You can't find a source for it, so I can't qualify it for you. I will point out that Chaim Avadia Yosef was asked specifically, he addresses this question specifically, if it's usher to eat these things, and if the Kohen, the Chazon Nishin, all the ones who do, he says, it's mefurish in Sefer Chassidim that it's okay. Sefer Chassidim, Rabbi Yehuda Chosid, brings a story. Someone went to a Chacham, and he said, I have a loaf of bread, and a mouse nibbled at the bread. Am I allowed to eat the rest? One of the things the Gemara mentions is if a mouse eats of a food, then it's kosher shikha. If a mouse nibbled on something, the whole thing is kosher shikha. If it's a block of cheese, then the whole cheese now is kosher shikha, for whatever the reason. So this fellow came to Yehuda Chosid and said, a mouse ate from the bread. Can I eat from it? So the Chacham says, why can't you eat from it? This is a very rabbinic kind of answer. Fellow says, no, a mouse ate from my bread, can I eat from it? So, where are you coming from? Why can't you eat it? What's the matter with eating the bread? So he says, I don't want to forget my learning. You know, I'm very careful not to eat things that might forget my learning. But it has to, right now I'm very hungry, and that's all I have to eat. Can I have the bread that the mouse nibbled from? So the Chacham said, that's not asa. The Mishnah says that you're only guilty if you're meisir meliba, if you like forget that, like you do actively forget it. Eating things that are kosher shikha doesn't fall into that category. Eating things that may be difficult, hard, bad for the memory is not being meisir meliba. That's not actively putting it out of your head. And then the Rav went on to tell him something else. I notice that you're not always learning. There are times that you are doing other things. And I think you're better off eating things that are kashla shikha, so you forget those other nonsense things that you're involved with and you're not learning. That's what the Rav said to him. That you're so careful not to eat things that are kashla shikha, you don't learn all the time. For you, eat them. You should forget some of the things that you're busy with. It's not worth remembering. That was the answer the Rav gave. It's important to say for Hasidim, the Chassid. So, the Sefer Chassidim is clearly of the opinion that it's not an issue, and it's okay to eat these things. But again, there are others who disagree. There's other tshuvas he brings that said it's not for sure. You'll forget. You might forget. And it's not something we're obligated with. And again, certainly if you say the whole thing doesn't apply b'zman hazeh, so like, you know, then the whole thing's not an issue. But again, Shulchan Aruch Rav did say it, the Chazon Ish did, others were concerned with these things. So there will be people out there who are concerned with these things. According to Sefer Hasidim, if you learn all the time and just learn all the time, so it makes sense to be careful. But if you're not learning all the time, maybe you want to forget some things. So.
I thought it was that you only forget Torah.
Who says? Sefer Hasidim is clearly not that way. Sefer Hasidim is clearly that's not just Torah. These are the farming. All it says in the Gemara is Kashla Shekha. These things are difficult on the memory. Yes.
Then should we also like wipe our hands on our clothes after?
To purpose you forget? Maybe. If you had some experience you want to forget, you should go out of your way and have an olive party and all the other things there.
You know, it's all wearing something inside out also.
Putting on two articles of clothing at the same time.
What is that? Why would you even do that?
Putting on two articles at the same time?
How? Yeah.
You take a hat, the yarmulke and the hat, on your head.
And it's
right,
we do that all the time.
That's, what would be an example of putting on two things at the same time?
There's a shell on the shirt that you took off together.
So that's much more about taking off together.
So that's a shayla, if taking off is the same problem.
If
Shlomo Zalman said it's not the same, he's only putting on, not taking off.
Really?
Yes. Taking off for sure people do the same time, two things at once.
Right.
So if Shlomo Zalman says you can.
I remember in high school somebody asked you that specifically and you said it's not a problem.
Good. I'm consistent. So Shlomo Zalman says it's not a problem. It's putting it on is the problem. So if you took it off together, you want to put it back on together, that's going to be an issue. But there's a number of things. I believe in that list is included the idea of a man walking between two women is a kashla shikhla issue. There's one of the things on the list.
Is it also staying between two women?
So the poskim, some differentiate in sitting versus standing and some don't. The shayla is walking down the aisle in a plane or a bus.
So that's interesting.
So if Scheinberg said there's no problem when people are sitting, it's only standing. And I recently saw in a different sefer that said it's no difference, but what are you going to do? You're stuck, so that's life. You should know, it is brought down from the altar of Kelm, that this whole thing only applies to married women. It does not apply to single girls.
So, but this is one of multiple reasons why?
Yeah, I'm sure, like everything. But the altar of Kelm said the whole issue, whatever the issue may be, Veli Lapian quotes the altar of Kelm, that it only applies to, when the Gonzales said, not 22 women, it's only to married women.
Is there any...
That's an answer for any Rebbe in Beis Yaakov.
Is there any of a woman only to men?
Same thing.
Both ways.
Doesn't that have something to do with witchcraft?
Or is that there are other things to do with witchcraft. Okay. I don't think this is one of them. There was a Gemara that two women were sitting on either side of the road staring at each other, and I've had that in hallways sometimes in places where for some reason the girl's sitting on opposite ends and you make them move over. That's a witchcraft kind of thing. That cast a spell on everyone's person.
One
side of each side? There's a Gemara, two witches were sitting on either side of the road, and whoever would walk past would get the spell, whatever they were doing. So that's a witchcraft kind of thing. Witchcraft used to be a popular pastime.
So, most people don't seem to mind, care that the altar says that it's okay.
I don't think they know about the altar.
It's because they don't know, or just because they're mindful.
I think they have no idea about it. It's not like you find, there's no Shulchan Aruch on these things. It's not described in Shulchan Aruch at all. All these things, called Shulchan Aruch.
You walk in
Eretz
Yisrael and Gula and your health
Because they think you're all married. Because they think you're married. Anyways, I don't know. Maybe they don't know it. I suspect they don't accept what the altar said. You know, he wasn't a Hasidish. I don't know. Whatever it is.
What if you don't know what all these things are? Like, this is the first time I'm hearing most of these things.
Right. So that's part of life. That sometimes you won't even know about these things ever.
And right. And then it's like you've been eating olives and then the challah you're home like
It's not, you know. Are you obligated to know these things? No. No, you would. I'm not going to teach a course of Ibn Yaakov. Today we discuss Kashrut Shechar. You know, that's not, you know, high on the list of things to do.
Why though?
But when you learn the Mishnah in Avos, now this is the time to learn it.
Is stepping over people also the same thing?
I don't think it's put down there. That's a superstition. For people who don't believe in superstition, we have a lot of superstitions. Now, getting back to the three Mishnahs. So the first one discusses constantly reviewing not to forget what you have learned. Responsibility. And again, to a certain degree, if it's talking about when Torah's Mabal Peh, it's preserving Torah. The responsibility to preserve Torah. And then it goes on to say that if your Yiras Chet is more than your Chachma will endure. That's the next Mishnah. And the way Rabbeinu Yonah explains it, Rabbeinu Yonah says that when you strive to learn Chachma, you also have to strive to stay away from Chet, and then your Chachma will be saved. But if you're not attempting to stay away from Chet, and your study is just, you know, intellectual pursuit, so then it's not going to endure. And the next mission is very similar. If your maisim exceed your chachma will be preserved, and you'll just constantly strive to learn more and more. If your chachma is more than your maisim, your chachma will not last. And it brings the question, how is it possible that you have more maisim than chachma if you don't know? Then obviously you can't do. So what Rabbeinu Yonah says is talking about is a person who hears different things from Chachamim to do this or that, and you just have to follow what they tell you to do, even though you don't know yet the reasons behind why I'm doing it. So my Maisim exceed my Chachma because I'm following what the Chachamim instruct me, even though it doesn't mean anything to me. I don't know the meaning of why I'm doing what I'm doing. If that's my approach, that's very similar, he says, to Naaseh V'Nishma, where we will do and then later learn more about it. But if I only will do what I understand and learn, then in the end, your Chachma will not last either. The point of both of these Mishnayos, that Yoshet Kodem Chachmaso and Maisem Rubme Chachmaso, that's when Chachmaso Miskayemes. Torah is not intended to be an intellectual exercise, as pleasurable as it may be to delve in Torah, without affecting the person. Torah is meant to raise the person up. Torah makes us great. Torah perfects us, cleanses, purifies. Torah refines us. It makes us better people. And if we're learning for that purpose and for that reason, then our learning is real and will last. If our learning is totally separate from our behavior and our character and they're not in sync with each other, then the Chachma will not endure. It happens to be these concepts are concepts that we ingrain in our youth when we mechanech them for mitzvahs. This is like a constant. People learn how to daven before they know what davening means. People do mitzvahs before they know what the mitzvahs mean. We train our children to daven and say brachos and to do mitzvahs. And later on, you have to catch up and understand what you're saying and why am I doing this? And that comes later. But we start by doing without knowing what or why. And some people complain to me, well, it doesn't make any sense. Doesn't it make more sense to first explain what davening means and then daven? And my answer is no. We are people whose maisim are merubim chachmasa. That doesn't mean you shouldn't know what you're saying when you're davening. I'm not giving an excuse for people who don't know what they're saying. All I'm saying is that this is a standard in Yadus. We enter into things and learn later about what does it mean, what I'm doing. But our performance of mitzvahs is not dependent on understanding the mitzvahs. People who will only do mitzvahs they understand will in the end reject lots of mitzvahs. We have chukim, we have things we don't understand, things that don't make sense to us. A Yerei Shemayim does it regardless, doesn't have to understand it. You know, one day I'll be Zoicha. I once met a man who refuses to do Kiddush Levana. Refused to do Kiddush Levana. We don't worship the moon. Kiddush Levana is not worshiping the moon. It's a bracha to Kiddush Baruch Hu. It revolves around the moon and the Bria and so on, but this person is not a Yerei Shemayim. Let's reject Kiddush Levana because I don't understand it. That's not our approach. Jeff, we don't understand. Okay, we don't understand everything. And we accept we don't understand anything. It's a Greek ideal, a Greek influence, that you do what you understand. Sciences. If you understand it, we accept it. If you don't understand it, it doesn't exist. You know, the Greeks didn't believe in the paranormal. They didn't believe in anything that wasn't part of the physical world. Rejection of you know, any religion for that matter. We embrace the paranormal. Do we understand it? No, we don't understand it. But it doesn't mean it's not there. It doesn't mean angels don't exist because we don't see them. Right? We don't live, we don't, as Yidden, we don't live merely in the world that we see and sense and understand based on human intellect. There are things we don't understand. We've never seen an angel. We don't understand what an angel is. But they're malachim. They're malachim. Someone who's rational will reject that. There's no such thing. If you believe in angels, you believe in fairy godmothers, you believe in leprechauns, they jump the problem all together, right? And it happens to be that there is actually probably a source for fairy godmother. We don't call it that. We call it mazalo. A person has a mazal. The Gemara says if a person senses danger but doesn't perceive any danger. So he should get out of there, move away from where he is. Some people call it sixth sense. The Gemara says he doesn't see it, but his mazel sees it. And his mazel is telling him to get out of there. Trust your mazel. So with this thing that the Gemara is calling your mazel, someone else would call it fairy godmother, or you know, or my guardian angel. They have all different kinds of names, the same thing. There's a thing called a mazel. And if you don't see it, doesn't mean your mazel doesn't see it. So...
Does everyone have one?
And we all have a mazel. Sure. We all have a mazel. Now, not all of us listen to our mazel. Mm-hmm. It's a different problem. And I'm not saying your mazel is going to give you a brand new outfit if you have a date and nothing to wear. But the point is, there are things in the paranormal that we don't have to understand, but we accept. There's such a thing. We accept there's different olamos. There's we live in the Almasiya, there's Bia, Yitzira, Silas.
Mazel can't give anything, though.
What?
What do we get from our mazels from Hashem?
I'm not saying he's giving you, but the Gemara says if you sense danger, you should respect that. Get out of there.
Huh, so that comes from paranoia or whatever. Like when we were in Israel, I'd be like standing at a bus stop sometimes and you're like, oh my gosh, get me out of here. And I would just like... Wait, that's totally like a paranoia. That's
well, this is a different, fascinating issue which should be studied or has been studied, but I've always pondered this. Not always. I have pondered this over times. We know there's a concept called a dibuk, where a person is possessed. I'm not saying that the story, the book, the dibuk, is real or true, but there are case studies where the Chafetz Chaim was involved and Chan of Hasiman and Gedolim through the years have recorded dibbuk scenarios. So I accept that reality. How many times were people suffering psychological disorders and without the knowledge of psychological studies diagnosed a dibbuk instead of a psychological disorder? If a person had split personality disorder, Wouldn't someone uneducated say they're possessed? Their voice changes, their demeanor changes, their personality changes.
Why is that?
And then it comes back. So I would imagine someone would have said that person was possessed. Today we have a clinical definition for this. I'm not saying it's common, but it exists.
Maybe it's false. Maybe that's what it is.
And you want to go the other way. You want to say every multiple personality disorder is possessed? I don't think
maybe,
so.
Maybe, but it doesn't have to.
I don't think that's correct. I this is my personal opinion. I don't think it's correct. I think there is an illness called multiple personality disorder. And it's not a dick. And it's not healed by, you know, the exorcism done by the Chacham at that time. The way it's described is different. I will point out, the way they describe the Dybbuk scenario, it is not the same as the way the description of the personality. But my point is, without the knowledge of these things, it's possible that people would claim them to be something that they weren't. That's what I'm saying. Does that make sense, what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's not I'm just rejecting paranormal, even if I accept paranormal, but I wouldn't know which is and which isn't. So when you say a person is paranoid, is their muscle constantly on overdrive, or they are suffering from a psychological disorder? That's the question, right? It could be they have a hyperactive muscle. It could be they just, okay, or unless you tell me the same thing again. But that's what paranoia is, a hyperactive muscle.
Can you have to tap into what your muscle thinks?
What?
Muscles are Rokhni's things, so why don't you have to be in a certain...
No.
No?
I don't think so. I think we all, it's part of our Bria.
But how do we...
I'm not saying you're tapping into the Yeshiva Shamala and you're listening into Moshe Ben Ashir. Your mazel is a part of you.
But it's our connection.
And it's wherever you... No. I think it's very much a part of everything we do. I don't think you have to be exceptionally spiritual to be in touch with your inner mazel. I think that Ruach HaKodesh is something else. That's not your mazel anymore. There are different things. But mazel, I think, is pretty basic.
Does that mean mazel, like...
There'd be different names for the Gemara. That's the Gemara's lashon. I'm not talking about mazel elyon, mazel tachton. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about something else. It's probably very similar to your ruach.
Okay.
All right. Either way. The idea that our chachma is very important to us is clear through all of these things. We put a premium on chachma. Jews throughout the ages valued knowledge, wisdom. When the world was illiterate, Jews knew how to read. There was a time when the only ones who were literate were the priests and the, you know, the monasteries. You didn't know how to read. Sometimes women did, sometimes women didn't, but among the men, we've been reading since Mishnayos, Gemara's all written down. I mean, we've been reading throughout the ages. These things are a premium by Klai Yisrael. Chachma is a premium. We don't want to forget our Chachma, we want our Chachma to be preserved. It's something unique about Klai Yisrael that the rest of the world has learned from us. The idea of school systems to educate all children comes from Klai Yisrael. It took a few thousand years for the Goyim to pick up, but Yeshua ben Gamla set up a school system that all the kids should be educated. And eventually it caught on in the world to have public schools. Before public schools, the rich had teachers and the poor had nothing. Right? The world eventually caught on to this Jewish idea that's been around for a long time. Knowledge, chachma, these are Jewish ideals that we put a premium on. But again, not in a vacuum. Not in a vacuum, and not as a end unto itself, so to speak. If there's Yer Shemayim, if there's Maisim Toivim, then it's something. To learn and not keep mitzvahs, there's nothing. That's not learning. That's not chachma. A person who's not loymed avonas la'aseis. That's why the halacha states when you learn Torah, even though the rule is ha'isik b'mitzvah, potter min a mitzvah. When you're engaged in one mitzvah, you don't stop to do a different mitzvah. But when you're learning Torah, you do. When you're learning Torah, you stop to do another mitzvah. And the question is why? If the rule is you place a mitzvah, put them in a mitzvah, and engage in one mitzvah, I don't stop to do a different mitzvah. If you are working in a hospital and helping a patient, and it's time to daven, you don't daven, you help the patient. You're involved in a mitzvah. And if you miss daven, it's davening. That's it. And there's no tashlum even. If a doctor is busy with a patient, if someone's with a chayla, there's no tashlum. You were doing a mitzvah, you were putter from davening then. You were exempt from tefillah. But when you learn Torah, you can't say, well, I'm learning Torah, so I'm not going to daven, I'm not going to do other mitzvahs. Because the whole point of learning is to do mitzvahs. If you're not going to do the mitzvahs, your learning is not learning. So it's like, by definition, when you learn, you're going to interrupt your learning to do mitzvahs, because that's the whole point of learning. So it has to be with Yeras Cheta, Kademas Chachmaso, Maisa, Mumi Chachmaso. These are the ways that we preserve our Chachma and that our Chachma is meaningful. There is a concept that if a mitzvah has to be done and someone else can do it, then I shouldn't interrupt my learning to do that mitzvah. Someone else can do it. But if it's a mitzvah that only I can do, then I have to stop my learning to do that mitzvah. I can't let it go because I'm learning. Yes?
Learning to be able to do, serve Hashem, do mitzvahs for this, mm-hmm. is because when you learn how to do mitzvahs and what mitzvahs are in the halachos, is that the obvious question?
Basically. Right. When you learn, it's always going to be relevant. The only thing is there are some parts that we're learning as with kabanos, so today we don't have kabanos. So we learn about kabanos, and it's as if we were doing the mitzvah that we don't have.
But aren't isn't sometimes learning not about any locals?
No.
A god
is mussar, hechasteis. What is a agadah? A agadah is the laws of your midos.
Even if it's chumash, learning sefer brachos, you have three mitzvahs, how many mitzvahs in sefer brachos?
Three mitzvahs out of tayag. Thousands of mitzvahs, non-tayag. In tayag mitzvahs, there's only 613 mitzvahs. There's only 613 in the minion of mitzvahs. There's thousands and thousands of mitzvahs. Everything is. If it's a gadata, it's teaching you how to think and how to act and how to refine your nature. And if you're learning halacha, you're learning how to act and conduct yourself in every possible situation. Yeah, there's nothing that's there just for fun. I mean, what would it even be? What would it be?
I don't know. Yeshman.
That's a ganata. That's teaching you how to act, how to think, how to improve your, you know.
If people come out and don't know halacha after learning, then what is that?
They missed the boat. I missed the bell. The method of learning is to understand where the Chumash says this, and based on that, we learn this. That's Torah Shabbat Sav. There's Torah Shabbat Peh, which explains Torah Shabbat Sav. And then there's explanation till you've got the practical halacha. It's a system. Everything could trace back either direction.
But if my student doing something, you're not sure what the halacha is.
Because when you finish learning a Gemara, you may not be clear what the conclusion is. So then you open up the back of the Gemara, and there's a Rosh. And beyond that, there's a Rif. And then you open a Rambam. And now you have these three opinions, and they don't always agree. So then you open up the Torah Shulchan Aruch, and he'll bring the views. And Beis Yosef will then come clear and tell you, this is, sum them all up, and this is what comes out. And the Archim Rosh says, yeah, but that was in Sephardim. Ashkenaz, we go by the Maharil. And then you open Shulchan Aruch, and the Machaber says this, and the Ma'aseh says this. And then Magen Avraham says, but 1 second, you left out this and that. And then you get a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch and a Chai Yodam, then Mishnah Berurah puts them together. And today you have commentaries on the Mishnah Berurah.
Okay, but you have a lot of Bachelor all the time and don't know
all about them. Because they're still holding by Ma'aseh Ruben Chachmasa. They are doing what they're supposed to do without knowing the reasons why.
They're learning a lot, and they should know halacha if they're learning
halacha. You have to know what to do. Let's put it this way. If I want to have a kosher kitchen, I don't have to learn Maseches Chulin and learn Yoredeya and get smicha. It would be nice, but you don't have to do that to have a kosher kitchen. There's certain things you have to know. And I don't understand all the background, I don't understand all the whys, and the lady calls me up and says, I found the fleshik spoon in the milchik drawer, and I say, it's fine. Let's move it back to the other drawer. And she, but why? I can't start teaching you now all your day. It's fine. Right? That's what you have to know. Right? There are things we are taught how to have a kosher kitchen without knowing everything behind it. When you get married, you're taught how to have a kosher home without knowing everything that goes into it. It's always that way. You know, eventually, maybe you will or maybe you won't get into all the nitty gritty details. But
so, and then the flip side, someone's learning,
whatever you're learning, you should learn it all the way down to the halach, of course.
They do, like in yeshivas, they do?
They should.
In general, do they?
I mean, maybe you could differentiate in an early stage, you're still being taught how to learn, but eventually when you are learning, that is what learning means. Learning means taking it all the way to the final conclusion.
So when somebody learns through all shas, then they should know all halach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. You had your Beisakov and seminary education. That's exactly what it means. That's exactly what it means. Well, you want to know what the Medrash that says, Elef Nichnas Lebeis HaMedrash, and at the end, only one is Yotze LaHara. One out of 1,000 that enter the Beis HaMedrash will exit being able to fully understand how to apply all the halachas. That's true. But it doesn't mean along the way that the other 999 didn't understand certain things better than before they went to the yeshiva. But to end up being able to, you know, understand clearly the wide gamut is 1 in 1,000. I don't know, some could argue it's even less than 1 in 1,000 nowadays. I don't know. So there are swarm. There's Kesach Shulchan Aruch. There's English Hichas Shabbos. There are ways. Now, if someone wants to keep Shabbos, we're not going to wait to learn Masechah Shabbos to keep Hichas Shabbos. We're going to get them an English book. And there used to be Rabbi Shimon Eider. Then it was Rabbi Simcha Bunim Kohn. Now it's Rabbi Bibiat. There are plenty of nice English books to teach you Hichas Shabbos. And you start from the beginning, and it could take years till you finish, but you'll know Hichas Shabbos. You won't know the Gemaras, and you won't know all the commentaries, but you'll know what you need to know. So that you know, is available to us. It always has been. In early generations, it was in Yiddish. Then Chavos Chaim did it. He wrote certain things in Yiddish just to teach simple halachas. Simple halachas to reach the masses. In earlier days, it was done in Arabic. You know, these things, in every time, there's a time when it was done in Aramaic, when that was the spoken language. Whatever is necessary to allow people to do this basic halachas, that's always been around in different forms, different languages, and we have it to this day too. That's Maisa of Merubin Chachmasa. So you're going to do without knowing all the ins and outs and the reasons why, and sometimes you'll go to a shiur and you'll hear an explanation about a specific facet, now you understand it better, and sometimes you won't. You know, this is always an issue with Chinuch Habanos. I once was listening to a very chashuv rav telling me that Chinuch Habanos is to teach the girls what to do, not why. Don't get into why, just tell them what. My feeling is if you're teaching already, you might as well teach why you're at it. It is more meaningful to them and probably they'll retain it better. But, you know, this is like a philosophical debate in how do you teach halacha in a Beis Yaakov. Do you teach with reasons or without reasons? You know, we're not going to obviously go through the depth that would be done in the yeshiva. But I think to a certain degree, some things, in today's society, I think it's easier to swallow when you're given a reason rather than saying, don't ask why, just do it, that's what you're supposed to do. People have a hard time with that. And if you give them explanation, that doesn't take all day. Give them a quick explanation to make sense of it. People are more willing to macabre. So, you know, it's just a matter of making it receptive. Could be at one time people are receptive without, they don't have to know why, just tell them what I gotta do. Don't explain anything, just tell them what I gotta do. So that's what they wanted, that's what they got. But I think today people are more interested in knowing the whys, not just the what's. And there's a time and place. I'll just add for the future reference, when you're in a class and you're being taught, that's the place for the wise. When you have a question like, what do I do with the spoon in the drawer? All you ask, what is the halacha about this situation? What am I supposed to do? Don't say this. Now, why is that? That's not the time or place for a why. And I've had to explain to the people sometimes. I can't give you a discourse now on the phone of why. That's the halacha. Come to a shiur one day, we'll explain it. But this, you know, answering shaylos on the phone, in my opinion, I don't think any rabbi does it. Starts giving detailed why explanations to halachas. Even to a man. If I have a list of 15 people to call back, I'm not going to start explaining whys.
But there are rabbanim who will discuss the.
Very few rabbanim will explain why when they're answering a shiur.
So
if they're giving a shiur, they'll explain everything. But if there's a shiur, if the answer is clear cut, this is what we got to do. And the fellow says, I want to learn something. Explain to me why. I says, it's very nice. You want to learn? I have a lot of time to teach you now. This is not my teaching time.
Yeah, so. Would do that.
In yeshiva? Maybe, but when you call a rav for the shiur, that's not the time for a lesson in these halachas. It's the time for an answer to the question. Another time will be the right time for a bigger discussion as to why. Not on the phone. The question?
So why in Tisha B'Av is there specifically a thing that you can't explain why? If you never explain why?
On Tisha B'Av, Talmud Torah is forbidden. Anything relevant to the day is permitted. Mm-hmm. If someone asks a shayla, you're allowed to answer. If you would be inclined on another occasion to explain your reason, you can't do that on Tisha B'Av. To my knowledge, most of them are not inclined to give reasons when they're answering shaylas. If they're teaching a class, it's something else. That's the whole point of teaching. Giving a shiur is very different than answering a shayla on the phone. When you're answering a shayla, you're answering a shayla. You know, this is your question, this is the answer. Have a good day. It's not the time. My husband's going on to know why, so I'm calling. You know, I'm not, especially when it comes to Yom Tov time, Pesach, there is no time to start giving dissertations as to why this and the other. Okay.